Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm your moderator for Backroom Politics live on Blog Talk Radio. You know, once in a while, we get stuff right. You know, like saying, hey, we think Chris Christie would make a great keynote speaker for the Republican National Convention. And sometimes, not so much when Bob Hines insists that Rob Portman's going to be the VP candidate. Okay, we're human. We're not perfect. But today on Backroom Politics, one state, two state, red state, blue state, the sides are picked. In the red corner, the tag team of Romney and Ryan, and in the blue corner, the tag team of Obama and Biden. Our view on the home stretch of the election, this and other Inside the Beltway topics, plus tell me a story today on Backroom Politics. And good afternoon, everybody out there in Radio Land. This is Backroom Politics Live on Talk Talk Radio, broadcasting from Belly's Backroom, 331 F Street, St. Mark's, of our nation's capital. I'm your moderator, Justin Russell. And my subject is every Tuesday around this time. He is the former 8-term member of Congress representing Washington's 2nd Congressional District, former vice president of Burlington Northern Railroad. He is Congressman Al Swift. Hello, Congressman.
Hello. I haven't heard the word Radioland since Lawrence Welk died.
Every once in a while, we like to get nostalgic, to bring back the glory days of radio broadcasting to you, our Emmy Award-winning broadcaster in residence. To my 11 o'clock, as he is every Tuesday, he's the former Undersecretary of Commerce. He served 4 presidents at last count, longtime Senate staffer, longtime Washington insider, and a very distinguished and charming fellow from the Stimson Center. He is the Honorable Alan Moore. Hello, Alan.
Glad to be here this eventful week.
Yes, not much to talk about. He is the former floor chief for then Congressman Gerald R. Ford. He is the former vice president of government affairs for the National Broadcasting Corporation. He is longtime Washington insider Bob Hines. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Justin. That's the first mistake I've ever made in my life.
What's that?
Say that Mr. Portman would win. Mm. But I still think.
We'll talk about that later.
We'll talk later.
We've got 2 hours of radio to fill. Bring it in a little bit there, Tonto. Crying out loud. And to my right, he is the former chairman of the Democratic Party of the great state of Maryland. He is longtime Washington insider, Carl Toobin. Hello, Carl.
Hello. Hello, everybody in Radio Land.
And next thing we know, Al's going to start yelling, Rangoon calling, hello. Hello, London.
One, two, and three.
We're already starting off on a happy note. So, can we get on to, I don't know, politics instead of reminiscing about Lawrence Welk?
Normally, you don't lose control till the end of the show.
Yeah, normally we have to go into the second hour and there's booze involved. So, in case you might not have seen it over the weekend, there was a pretty subtle announcement out of the Romney camp about them picking the ticket for the vice presidency for the Republican Party nomination. And the winner is, of the beef steaks, Chairman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, chairman of the Budget Committee, which obviously a bunch of people kind of went, Bob, I'm going to start with you.
You would, wouldn't
I? I would start with you. Bob, I have to ask the question. Why? Everybody now, because like we are going to do, everybody now is armchair quarterbacking this pick. The reality is, we had talked about Paul Ryan being kind of a dark horse, but we've heard Rob Portman being the safe pick. Do you agree with that assessment about Rob Portman? Would he have been the safe pick?
Safer than Ryan.
Safer than Ryan. What?
Yes. Well, because he doesn't have a problem that I think the Mr. Ryan does. But let me just step back a minute and say, I think what the choice does is guarantee an election that is going to be talked about primarily, maybe not strictly the economy, but the entitlement programs and the Ryan proposals with respect to them. And I think that's going to be one of the major thrusts of the Democratic campaign. I'd be amazed if it wasn't.
Now, Congressman Al, being a Democrat, you have seen almost Republicans dancing jigs all along Pennsylvania Avenue with the thought that Paul Ryan is, in fact, the nominee for the vice presidency and Romney's pick to go second chair on this. Is this a good thing for Democrats?
Well, I think both parties tend to dance jigs in the street whenever their nominee announces his choice. It's part of supporting the party. I don't think it's a particularly auspicious thing. I don't think it's a terrible
thing. Well, the Democrats were thrilled. If you heard everybody from Debbie Wasserman Schultz all the way to...
Yeah, but the other party does that knee-jerk as well. You know, he couldn't have named Jesus Christ and wouldn't have had the Democratic National Committee, you know, find fault with it. You'll lose him at Easter, you know, I mean.
Please tell me you did not just really say that. Go on, Congressman Al. Wow, this is getting off to a rolling start. This is going to be a good show.
I think that Bob is right. This is going to make this about some things that can be hard for the Republicans to defend politically, though they may be right on policy. And it seems to me very hard for them to have selected this man as their vice president and not go there, because then they'll be criticized for that. So it's either a profoundly stupid move or more likely a very gutsy one, and we'll see how it works out.
Alan, you've been around Senate and presidential campaigns for a few decades. You're familiar with the inner workings of D.C. Is this a surprise to you?
It's a minor surprise, but it makes sense. It's an odd case. It's an odd choice in that I think it helps both parties make their case. It gives Romney a chance to say to the faithful, hey, this is a guy who many of you believe in, who also happens to be very smart and has been willing, as Al said last week, to put out a real budget with real detail, which is something that the candidates heretofore have been very, very hesitant to do. For Romney, it helps him say, yes, this is a guy who has a long view, and I'm very supportive of his ideas. So if you're wondering where I'm coming from, although I lead and he follows, I'm very comfortable hooking up with him. On the other hand,
the difference being he understands what he's saying and I don't.
The other thing that it does, though, is it gives plenty of ammunition to the Democrats, who we know from having watched the last couple of months that they want to talk about anything except their record. So they've been picking on Romney's wealth and his refusal to increase taxes and this one single solitary issue of raising the taxes on the top 1% or 2%, as though that's going to answer all the questions. It gives them new ammunition to talk about the content of ideas that Ryan has put forth, particularly about Medicare and the other entitlement programs. So they both get something out of it. As far as the public is concerned, I think it changes the narrative from one set of negative back and forth to some new negative back and forth, at least it'll be a change of subject for a while.
But, go ahead, Carl Toobin.
You got some other factors. You said that everybody was, yelling and screaming hoopla about Ryan, and it's not true. There are some.
Well, I'm talking about the Democrats. The Democrats were thrilled with the pick. The Democrats thought this is the greatest thing that's gonna put them in the White House again.
Right, and I'm thinking to myself, I was one who was wishing that Ryan would be on the ticket because I thought it'd be a good thing. Now I'm saying, I hope I don't. I hope my wish doesn't come true.
Well,
but anyway, here's the thing. There are Republican strategists here in this town who are very anxious because of what Ryan has done with his budget, and they feel that it's going to affect candidates down the line, congressional candidates
mm-hmm.
and Senate candidates. There are even some Senate candidates, I think Montana, who has put on a series of ads at the fact that he voted against the Ryan plan. So you've got that whole mix coming in. It's going to rev up both bases, which is mean you'll have hopefully a bigger turnout than we had before. But it makes for a very interesting situation.
But before we get into the pluses and minuses of Ryan as a choice, a very interesting series of comments coming from the Speaker's office and Speaker John Boehner. John Boehner is almost, what's the word I'm looking for? He's skeptically supportive. Our friends at Politico had a headline that he was walking a fine line on Paul Ryan. Bob, you're familiar with the speakers in the Speaker's office. Why are they walking almost on eggshells when it comes to Paul Ryan, do you think?
Well, what Carl said just a moment ago is, I think, accurate. In the House, House races, there will be maybe half dozen to a dozen seats that, because that Republican member voted for the Ryan budgets twice, he or she will be in a close race, what they might not otherwise have been in, possibly lose. I think he is a little bit concerned about the impact of Social Security and health care and the kinds of budget problems that Ryan stands for, that the Democrats will be able to argue somewhat effectively that you're going to kill Medicare as we know it, you're going to ruin health care. Those kinds of arguments are going to be part of the campaign now, because we're going to have a serious debate about those issues, those domestic issues.
But for the speaker's quote, to put it in perspective, instead of saying it's a fantastic choice, this is a great choice for the party, Speaker Boehner called Ryan, quote, a pretty bold choice.
He is a bold choice.
But is that a message from the Speaker's office saying, rolling dice on this one?
But you got to look
at Carl Tuven.
You got to look at one other thing. When he is the Speaker, evidently, and the National Republican Committee, Congressional Campaign Committee or Committee, have been worried about the Ryan budget. And this puts it, as I said before, this puts it up front. And all these people have to either defend that budget or go against it. And it, as we've been talking, it's going to have implications down the line.
I rather like the idea that the Republicans have got a nominee that will pay no attention whatever to the House, as well as the Democrats have had.
wait a minute, Alan Moore. Is that accurate? Is that an accurate assessment by Congressman Al?
The candidate won't pay
any attention to the House.
It was a joke.
But there are other people, even in the Republican Party. I mean, let's be clear. There are several Republican leaders that have whispered, saying this may not have been the right choice. There are people literally in the party saying in some instances that the excitement about Ryan is insincere, that they'll acknowledge that he is almost a liability in some sorts, Alan Moore.
He was not the safe choice. And there was risk associated, which meant, on the one hand, there was going to be enthusiasm that you would not have had with a Portman or a Pawlenty. On the other hand, there's exposure for the Democrats on some of the positions he's taken. That's why there was at least an element of boldness. That's why it was a bit of a surprise. We don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, there are Republicans who are quietly, and they're all not for attribution, saying, "Oh, I don't know, this is giving too much ammunition to the other side." But what we were faced with was this campaign where neither side wanted to be very bold about their initiatives, and we were getting into the weeds and trying to label and characterize the other side. Now there's a chance, at least, that there will be a national debate on some of the bigger issues. I'm hoping that that's a positive, whatever the ultimate outcome.
Yeah. Our friends in Political, Jonathan Martin, wrote a great article talking about how some of the GOP are a little hesitant. And he quoted a couple of unnamed Republicans going down the street you were driving down, Alan, that the most popular phrase in Washington right now is, "I love Paul Ryan, but..."
Bob? You know, listen, there were people who didn't think Ronald Reagan was a good candidate who were Republicans back in 1980, my God. Of course, there's always going to be...
He was, and they're using a lot of the terminology on Ryan right now, and Romney Ryan, that they used with Reagan as a, this is a bold choice for the party.
Well, it, you know, the fact...
Is there similarity?
Well, I'm not going to decide whether... Anybody running this time is a Ronald Reagan. My point is, you know, there's always some underground, geez, they didn't pick my guy, you know, they made a mistake here and there. This is a bold choice. I think what this says is that the only way I think the senior Republicans in the Romney team saw a pretty decent chance to win the election is to be bold and to force a serious debate. And we'll have a serious debate now.
Right.
And I think that's really important. And hopefully, and I say hopefully, the debate will be clear enough and understandable enough so that so people won't just do knee-jerk reactions on one side or the other, but actually take a look at how serious the fiscal situation is in this country, how much the deficit is, and how are we going to pay it off. We got a credit card for $15 trillion that we owe. We got to pay it somehow.
Congressman Al.
A Republican should raise this point. So I will lay it out there, and any of you who want to claim credit for it. I wonder if you can have a serious debate so long as the Democrats have a 40, 50, 60-year history of demagoguing Medicare and Social Security. You can present a serious argument, which is a hell of a lot harder to lay out understandably to Joe Blow American, than you can say he's pushing your grandmother off the cliff. It is a perfect opportunity to have the serious debate, and I think the Democrats would avoid one doing what I suggested at their peril, because at some point they're going to have to face up to it. And will have to swallow a lot of their verbiage if they go that way. But I'm skeptical that the politicians, the hired guns, the politicals, the ones that pull the campaign strings, are going to allow a responsible response on the part of the Democrats.
Alan Moore.
I have to agree with Al here.
So you can take ownership of
that.
I didn't say that.
No, I mean, that's...
You two cynics.
Yeah.
And, you know, cynicism is probably the right point of view.
But here's the thing. When Congressman Alan Moore are, "Oh, ye of little faith," Alan Moore, go on.
No, I think that the consternation by some Republican strategists is reflective of what Al's talking about, that, oh my God, we've handed them some ammunition, they're going to hammer us again with some new arguments about how they are going to throw grandma off the balcony.
Cliff.
And the press, on the other hand, you know, the press will play a role here, and they will try to at least engage some of that conversation. You see it just in the last few days where some of the spokespeople, that ever lovely, warm, and wonderful Stephanie Cutter, who just makes my skin crawl whenever I see her, is being taken on by some of the press. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was making an argument over and over again and getting pushed back over and over again by mischaracterizing what it was that Ryan has proposed for Medicare. So it's yet to be determined. The Democrats, not surprisingly, the Republicans who are doing the same thing in a different way, are all over this, trying to define Ryan as this insensitive, uncaring. One of my favorite remarks, though, was somebody who said, Ryan's just like Palin, except, okay, he's got substance and a voting record. Excuse me, how is that, like
that similar to Palin?
That's exactly what she did not have.
Wait a minute.
Carl Tubin.
There's another part. Ryan can see Russia from his window in Wisconsin.
And he doesn't wear high heels.
Unless
he looks over Canada. He looks over that horizon.
Wow.
But, they're trying to define him now in the most negative, narrow, idealistic, ideological way that they can.
They're going to try and do that anyway, Alan, because, I mean, look, let's look at the numbers. I mean, I forget who said it earlier on the show, was we've got 8.3% unemployment rate, 8.3%. We've got a terrible budget crisis going on in Washington. We've got fiscal spending that's arguably out of control. This is all that. Or is this all that the Democrats have in their cubby to shoot the arrow at?
Well, one comment. I know that
Carl
yeah. got something to add, but here's part of the dilemma on policy. Ryan's program was looking at the intermediate and long term, where we have this massive problem of multi-year trillion-dollar deficits. You address that stuff at the peril of the short term, which
right.
is the 8.3% unemployment that catches most people. You know, it's like, I have Social Security in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. How about my job next week?
Right.
And so we've got, and the solutions to the short term are different than the solutions to the long term. The president does not want to talk about the short term because it reflects on his 3.5 years of failure, the failure to make fundamental change that works for everybody. It's not just on him. Part of it's just intractable, difficult, challenging problems. So this is part of the issue too, where the Ryan stuff is longer term, long view stuff, but it's the short term that still captures people's fears and concerns.
Carl Tubin.
Well, there are a couple of things I was going to say. First of all, about Ryan. You know, he is right now, he's a deficit hawk. He's laying out all these things to straighten out the economy. But where was he in the Bush administration where he voted for bailouts, where he did a lot of things against his own philosophy? And all of a sudden, boom, he turns around. Number two, this is a game changer in certain states. If the debate is going to be on Social Security and Medicare, and the Democrats win, then we take Florida, we take Pennsylvania, there was another state that has a very high senior population, which could come, I think it was Ohio or one of the other states, that could come into the Democratic column.
But let's go back and look at, you know, when we talk about Paul Ryan, and we're coming up on the break right now. When we come back, though, I want to talk about the pluses and negatives of Ryan and, you know, what is exactly the argument of saying, now that you have the Republican ticket, now the Democrats are really going to come out swinging. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room in Washington, D.C. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us. You know, here on Backroom Politics, you hear us order drinks during happy hour, the second hour of Backroom Politics live on Blog Talk Radio. But what you don't understand is the quality of the drink that we're getting here at Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Backroom Politics premier sponsor. Hey,
you got Dave Hammerly and the bar crew there at Shelley's Back Room that really know how to pour a drink. Whether it's something simple like my on-air Jack Daniels on the rocks with a splash of water, or whether it's something elaborate like what has to be the best martini in the District of Columbia for Congressman Al Swift. Wine selection, scotch selection that will blow your mind. They've got Highland scotches, they've got Isle of Skye scotches, blended, single malt, anything you want. Port wines to go with that great cigar from the great humidor. Down here at Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Come on down, have a drink, and make some new friends. Or heck, just come on down and listen to Backroom Politics on Tuesdays.
We're back here live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street, on the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. This is Backroom Politics Live on Blog Talk Radio. And during the break, Al, you wanted to follow up on something you were talking about the Democrats earlier.
I was talking about their tendency to demagogue certain issues, Social Security and so forth. And I think the Republicans tend to demagogue taxes, so they each have their weaknesses. But I remember, you know, my question is, where is the leadership going to come from? And I remember being in a whips meeting, a Democratic whips meeting, when Jim Wright was the speaker.
Right.
And Jim Wright was very, very strongly, even then, for a tax increase as a means of dealing with the deficit and all of that. And one of the members of the caucus got up and said, "But Jim, every one of us will be out of office. People will vote us all out of office if we vote for a tax increase." And Wright, who had a very short temper, turned brilliant red, stood up, took a step toward this congressman, pointed his finger and said very loudly, calling him by his first name, "Did you come here to get reelected or did you come here to govern?" And I'm wondering, is there anybody around here like that that is going to be able to have the guts to try to point out that the Democrats, and over on the Republican side, the Republicans have responsibility to govern, not just to get reelected?
Well, arguably, I mean, Carl, too, I want to follow up on that because, you know, when we talk about leadership, many have said, I've said this on this show before, that out of everybody on the Hill, the one person when it comes to fiscal responsibility that's shown any kind of leadership, in a time where we're scrambling around trying to make Band-Aid deals, Paul Ryan said, look, the days of Band-Aid deals are over. We've now got to come up with a budget. He's the one who came up with his own budget proposal in the GOP. Does that not show a little bit of leadership, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it does.
Bob?
Sure it does.
Why?
Look at the great followership it's had.
So now we're getting back to a subject we talked about numerous times, is there's a definite lack of leadership in Congress. We'll talk about that in a second. Carl Tooman.
Yeah, there's a you know, you talk about people coming to govern. He also had a very good outlook on his own members. And
you're talking about Jim Wright.
Jim Wright. Tim Worth had introduced the telecommunications bill, and it was debated. It was coming up to it was coming up in the Commerce Committee for approval. And the story I was told is that somebody went to Jim Wright at a reception, and they said, Jim, can I have a minute of your time? And he said, yes. He says, you know, I understand that if Tim's bill is approved by the Commerce Committee and goes to the floor, that the CWA is going to vote against every Democrat on that committee.
The CWA being the Communications Workers.
Yes, yes.
Right.
They were going to vote against every, they would not give any money to any Democrats on the Commerce Committee. Jim looked at the person and said, is that right? And the person said, yes, sir, that's what I hear. 2 weeks later, the bill came down, and Tim got
he
up.
He came off the schedule.
Came off.
Right.
They went to the committee meeting, and then Tim got up and withdrew the bill.
Right. But, you know, the one thing, I mean, we've talked about this before, bold leadership. Bob, I think it was you who brought up LBJ during the break, saying, you know, while we're supporting Civil Rights Act, we just lost the South.
Yeah.
Are we in a fiscal losing of the South, i.e. Florida, as a result of Paul Ryan?
The reason that we have been saying,
Congressman Al,
from the very beginning that both parties need to hold hands and jump in this thing together is there is no way that you're going to do it without having a lot of resentment. And for the parties to share the resentment is about the only way you're going to get it done.
That's right.
Alan Moore.
Yeah, and here's the problem. We know nothing's going to happen between now and the election. We've got this fiscal cliff we've talked about that they're going to have to address after the election, before December 31. And then there is a wide understanding, I think, of members of Congress, that there's some big decisions that have to be made next year about the future. And whether we resurrect something like the Simpson-Bowles Commission report that we often talk about.
Which, by the way, Paul Ryan's a big supporter of.
Or well, we can talk about that. He actually didn't vote for it. He was sat on the commission.
He was on the committee. He didn't vote for it.
But there's an interest. There's some history to that. But the fact of the matter is we've got some real tough decisions. It's going to take this. Join hands, jump into the deep end of the pool, and then try to hold each other up. This campaign already is so ugly and just going to continue to be ugly, and we're going to demonize Ryan now for having the courage to say, here's the problem, here's how I think we should solve it, and getting his House members to go along, and I mean, other people had input into that whole enterprise, but at least he got something through the House, and some of those people are nervous now that it's going to be used against them. That's hardball in the world of politics. My concern, though, is the ugliness is so significant, and some of the things we were talking about last week and we'll probably be talking about in the near future as they continue to demonize Ryan is How can these guys work together in the future? Because they're going to be so angry about how this thing was won. When you win ugly, you do a lot of damage to relationships between the two parties, and it takes a long time for those wounds to heal.
Bob?
I agree with everything Alan said, but I'd almost say we're already to the point where we can't even talk to each other. That's what's really unfortunate. Now, and I don't care who wins the election. It's going to be a real darn big problem to get anybody to sit down and say, we have to solve these problems. And it's so easy. It is so easy for the Democrats to say, you're going to kill Medicare as we know it. It's easy for the Republicans to say you're irresponsible because you don't want to solve the deficit problem. And the Democrats are going to say all you want to do is raise taxes. I mean, it's really such a mess. And I don't know how we're going to be able to get together if we don't have, and I would hope that, and I say it when I said earlier, I would hope that the campaign, as it goes forward, rather than pointing fingers at each other and yelling at each other, would at least try to have a discussion of how we're going to solve the fiscal problem of the United States, because it is really, really bad.
And well, we're going to talk about the debate later in the show, the debate schedule that has come up, and there's now even problems with people criticizing the moderators of the debates coming up. We can't even agree
there's
on who
issue.
We want to moderate. But the one thing that I've noticed in watching, you know, from all the talking head shows and just talking to some of my friends on the inside of the GOP and inside the campaign, is that there seems to be almost, you know, everybody expects that Democrats and Republicans are going to come together. It seems right now with this election, Ryan, that not even the Republicans are coming together. You know, you've got one strategist that was quoted in our friends at Politico, saying that, you know, the good news is the ticket has a vision. The bad news is that vision is basically just a chart of numbers used to justify policies that are extremely unpopular, unquote. It seems that we can't even agree, and there's dysfunction in the party right now as opposed to dysfunction on the Hill. Is that accurate, Bob?
I think that's highly overblown. Each party wants to win. You don't win by fighting among yourselves. Once the teams have been picked, that's your team.
But Alan Moore, that's the risk you go with as far as doing a bold pick like a Paul Ryan. You're not going to make everybody happy, obviously, but there seems to be a lot of dysfunction inside the party as a whole.
You never make everybody happy. When Obama picked Joe Biden, there were plenty of people who thought, not Biden. The guy doesn't shut up, and he puts his foot in his mouth, and he once plagiarized a Brit when he was running for president. Oh, my God, they're going to destroy him. He's a decent, honorable, long-serving senator who turned out to work out, not because he was so fabulous, but because the election was about Obama versus McCain. And then McCain picked Palin. Yeah, a lot of people went nuts for her, some in a positive way and some in a negative way, and that never changed. So the thing about this pick is the negatives aren't nearly in the neighborhood. Probably the enthusiasm isn't as high because he doesn't have this flamboyant personality, but Romney didn't want a flamboyant personality. Next to him, Ryan looks flamboyant, and Romney himself has been energized. Don't underestimate the importance of that fact.
Congressman Al.
Let me make a point that I want to make, and it's logical to fit in right here, but it's kind of off onto some of the more typical ways that you evaluate vice presidential candidates. The fact is that he is very, very much like the front runner. He's very much like Romney. He is fairly colorless. he isn't a jolly fellow. He may, if we're lucky, not sing, but otherwise he's very similar to Romney. His approach is that way, its numbers, and so forth, and I just don't see where the warmth of the ticket is enhanced by Paul Ryan, and the ticket needs some charm, it needs some warmth, and I don't think Romney will provide it, and I doubt if Ryan is. That may turn out to be the mistake they made, not any of these other
out of all the people we've talked about associated with the Veep states, particularly your Rob Portmans, your Tim Pawlenties, even your Bobby Jindals, and in that sort, is there a candidate that could have brought warmth to the ticket that would have gotten
the governor of New Jersey?
You think Chris Christie would have brought warmth?
I think he would have brought personality, he'd have brought verve, he'd have brought pep, he'd have brought character.
And a lot of baggage, though. Bob Hines.
Well, you had Senator Rubio of Florida would probably have made a more exciting candidate. But, I'm not so sure excitement is all that important. It certainly is useful. But I think in this election, the reality is that both parties have such strong views about how to do things and how different they are, that I think the bases in both parties are pretty well revved up.
Congressman Al.
I didn't mean to emphasize excitement as much as I did some warmth, some humanity. I think this is a contest between two accountants and two politicians. And, unless they're doing your books, the politicians are going to win that.
But, Alan Moore, we're in a different stage of our American history right now, whereas we look back at, an election like, let's say, the election in 2000, there was a lot of criticism of Bush not being very articulate, being almost a country bumpkin in some assessments, but there wasn't a lot of quote-unquote warmth. Let's be honest, Dick Cheney is not the warmest human being inside the Beltway, but now we're dealing with, are we looking at warmth? Do we need a warm ticket? Well, or are people more concerned about my job?
You don't need a warm ticket. You need some warmth in the ticket. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Alan Moore?
I think Al's touched on a very interesting subject, which is people want a candidate that they can kind of relate to in some way. It's the old question, who would you like most to sit down and have a beer with? My guess is that most people, if they looked at the four people, would say, none of them. Who else you got? And if they were forced to pick one, they'd probably go with Obama, even though he is hardly the picture of warmth and caring. We do know a little bit more about him as a family man, and he's got attractive family, attractive daughters, an articulate, active wife. So he probably wins by default.
Yeah.
Congressman Al.
And the vice president, while vice presidents don't count for anywhere near as much as presidents or the candidates thereof, Biden has been working the railroad train every day for years and does it very, very
well. Yeah, but every time Biden has also been seen as a liability to the Democratic Party. Every time there's now a new controversy where he's saying that if you elect Romney president to a large African-American audience, his quote is, Romney will put y'all back in chains. Anytime the vice president shows up at an event and there's a camera rolled, hey, because Joe Biden's going to say something that's going to get
him. I absolutely disagree with that.
Why?
Let's go back to our friends in the media, who once they have established a character for you, they will, every time you come anywhere near reinforcing that, they will get you. Example, Gerald Ford.
Yep.
Gerald Ford was portrayed
as a cluck
in Straight News and on Saturday Night Live as somebody they couldn't take two steps without falling down.
Yeah.
As Bob had pointed out to me some years ago, this man was an athlete.
Yeah.
This man was a very graceful kind of person, and he had a couple of accidents, and the press pounded on it, and then he couldn't stub his toe without the same kind of thing I think has happened to Bud.
Carl Tobin.
One thing, you know, we talk about warm and fuzzy. One thing that I was impressed with the other day, I was watching the Olympics, and I go to other stations, and they had Ryan out at a at the Iowa State Fair, and it was interesting because he was, and I've campaigned with a lot of people, and he was warm, and he was gracious, and he was talkable. I mean, it was a different side of him than I've ever seen, and I have to pay him a compliment for that. Now, what that means, who knows? But, you know, it's maybe.
And I understand we're talking about
Paul Ryan.
Right. And
well, one of the things I found always interesting is people will meet a politician and they'll walk away and say, Jesus, he's a really nice guy. And I keep saying, you know, the elect devils, you know, don't let people with two heads. So the fact that he's a nice guy is not a surprise.
But we still look at, you know, again, Paul Ryan as the choice. Is his youth, I mean, youth 40 is, you know, very much, I don't even know what the right word is. It's very much based on perception. But Paul Ryan is a youthful 42. He looks like he's in his early 30s and should be a junior staffer instead of chairman of the budget committee. Is his youth going to be a positive boost for the GOP ticket, particularly with Romney, Bob?
Sure. Well, he has an attractive wife. He's got a couple of kids who are, it's an attractive family. I would say it's much like the Romney family or the Obama family. They're attractive people. So, but I don't think that is going to really have any fundamental impact on the campaign.
Congressman Al.
I agree with Bob. I think it's not going to hurt him. It's not going to help him. He's not that young. If he were 38 or something, maybe, but no. And he's got a record of accomplishment behind him that compensates for whatever that anybody's going to holler about youth.
Alan Moore.
You know, the last time the Republicans have kind of a youthful looking the vice president, it was Dan Quayle. and he had been in the Senate for a good while. He had a record of some being a solid
legislator.
Not a huge record of accomplishment. He fumbled and stumbled and danced around like a little boy.
Can't spell potato. I don't know what the problem is.
The day that he was announced, and he never, ever was able to escape that.
The media just kept pounding
him. Absolutely. And then he kept making these little stumbles, and whatever one might think of him, it was a very unfair portrayal. The thing about a guy like Ryan, young, attractive, fit, is one, he's got a whole body of work that becomes the immediate focus, and he's experienced enough that he's not going to be looked at as some dumbbell.
I agree with that.
He's got different issues. It's the content of the substance that he has stood for that is going to be vilified and redefined, but I don't think because of the record of accomplishment and his obvious knowledge about the intricacies of federal government, that he's going to be seen as too young.
Nobody's
a very smart guy.
Nobody's going to call him an empty suit.
Right. Carl Tobin.
You've got another vice presidential candidate who I believe was 42, Theodore Roosevelt, who became a very young president. And you also had John F. Kennedy at 42, who was running for president. Who knows, experience-wise, Kennedy had, they went after him on foreign policy, and they kept pointing to the fact that his father was ambassador, and he traveled over the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Congressman Al.
I've forgotten his name, the vice president chamber.
Quayle.
Quayle.
Quayle. Quayle had an unfortunate look to it.
Right.
I remember standing next to Milton Berle while Milton Berle was doing a routine,
in the middle of it, Burl stopped and looked at him and said, "You look like a poor man's Pat Sajak." And it brought down the house, and it was terribly unfair. But he did look a little like a Pat Sajak, you know.
But, you know, in looking at all this, I mean, just on, you know, the perception and, you know, even the fact, I mean, even in the excitement of the announcement, Mitt Romney declared, as he was introducing Paul Ryan, he was going to be the next president of the United States as opposed to the next vice president. And by the way, corrected the gaffe in a really warm way.
Yeah.
Got to give him props for that. But when we look at the big vulnerability in Paul Ryan, obviously the ad that everybody's been showing over the weekend is the Paul Ryan pushing the grandma off the cliff ad from New York State. And that unto itself, you've got his auto industry bailout vote. That's going to anger a lot of Republicans. You've got his support of Simpson Bowles, although he didn't vote for that. And, Alan, you might want to talk a little bit about the history on that.
Well,
he was on the commission.
He was on the commission and was one of the Republicans who chose not to vote for it, which is unfortunate because it needed a few more votes. It didn't get the help it needed from the White House and didn't get all the help it needed from the Republicans. And Ryan was one of them. He was very explicit about why he did not support it. And it wasn't because there were tax revenues. It was because he felt that it wasn't bold enough on proposing spending cuts. So, but he was a very, very active participant and player in that commission and a big believer in much of what was in that report. And I think it guided, it informed him and guided his knowledge on the budget committee as well.
But is his active participation, even though he didn't vote for it, a lot of the media outlets have said that, and he did come out at one time saying, look, I support what the commission's doing.
He's got a number of issues. So does everybody who ever votes and has a track record. Even Al, brilliant as he was when he was in Congress, probably had a record that was not right down the party line.
Motorboater wasn't extremely popular.
All sorts of things that any member does. Well, and
you got hammered on
Reagan's budget on the last vote. Ashamed of.
You know, they. Some of their votes are to govern. Some of their votes are to be reelected. Some of their votes are to trade votes on something they don't care very much about to win some support from somebody else. It varies all over the place. But in the case of Ryan, yeah, he voted for the auto bailout. He's from southern Wisconsin. They've got auto plants or auto supply manufacturers down there. That was a vote that was really critical to his district. He voted for it. He voted for the Troubled Assets Relief Program, the so-called TARP program. So did most people. but he voted for that. He supported Bush on immigration reform. And those are things that now...
Which is a sensible position.
Absolutely. Republicans are saying, you know, oh no. But nobody on the right is going to look at Paul Ryan and say, what, he voted for the auto bailout? Give me another guy. The body of his work is consistent with what most thoughtful conservative Republicans favor in terms of the direction the country needs to go. And on some of the social issues, he's pretty far over there too. So nobody's going to please everybody with every vote, but Ryan is not going to anger right wing people for any votes he's had in a way that would cause them to turn off.
I mean, even looking at Ryan as a total package. I mean, now that we know it's Romney Ryan. Let's look. I mean, even looking at geographic areas where Ryan could be a bump, Midwest. Bob, being from the Midwest, you're familiar with Midwestern politics and political style. He's obviously got that, you know, farm boy charm that a lot of people in the Midwest, the Rust Belt, appreciate. Does he help in the Midwest?
Oh, yeah, I think he does. He is a typical Midwestern kind of guy. And I think he will be helpful there. But, you know, vice presidents don't really, you know, bring a whole lot of votes with them. It's the presidential candidate who is the key to that. I mean, can Ryan help a little bit in the Midwest? I think he can. But I don't see him, in effect, impacting a number of key states because he is the vice presidential nominee.
Well, but you said earlier before the show we were talking, as we were getting prepped up for it, that whereas he might be able to deliver a Wisconsin and some of the Midwest, you believe that Ryan will lose Florida for the Republican Party.
I think it could well be.
Why?
Well, it won't be anything he does. It'll be what the Democrats do. And if I were a Democrat strategist, I would start taking a look at his budgets real hard, and then I would start to develop two or three good ads talking about cutting social programs, in effect doing all the kind of things that the retirees feel, are attacking them.
Which you're already doing, by the way. David Axelrod has come out today and said that Paul Ryan's Medicaid proposal will bankrupt him.
Well, that's ridiculous. It's already bankrupt. It's a little late. But the fact of the matter is, in Florida, you're going to have a lot of people who are going to see an ad that says just something like that and don't recognize and don't understand that his program doesn't change any of the benefits for any of the people who are even close to retirement, much less in retirement.
Alan Moore.
Well, what's interesting about the Ryan pick, and why I think it in this particular election, it has a somewhat larger impact than vice presidential candidates normally have, which is not very much. His pick gives Romney, fills a bit of a vacuum for Romney. It gives Romney's campaign and his narrative some definition that was missing, and we've talked about that. Now, that definition is not all positive.
What's the definition?
The definition, policy-wise. What's Romney really talking about beyond his resume? What are his plans, ideas, and programs? He's got a tax plan, he's got stuff, but it's never been a very clear narrative. Ryan has a narrative, for better or worse, that's got a lot of specificity to it, and now Romney has joined that at the hip. They're going to Romney and others are saying, Romney's in charge. He's not buying into the Ryan plan. Ryan will be buying into the Romney plan, but he's very comfortable with what Ryan has done. So it helps to give some greater definition, again, for better or worse, to Romney. And how bad it is, as Bob points out, it's some of that definition, some of the specifics, particularly with regard to Medicare, are going to be used as a club to beat on Romney about in places like Florida, and they're going to say he wants to gut Medicare and preserve and give additional tax cuts to the rich. Is that the direction you want this country to go? I think that's an unfair characterization, but I think it's a defensible characterization given the history, and I think that's what we can expect.
Well, Congressman Al, we look at the Democratic Party chairman down in Florida, Rod Smith. He said over the weekend, quote, in selecting Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney has crystallized the contrast of this election. Ryan is the architect of Romney's extreme budget plan, which would end Medicare as we know it, increasing health costs for Florida's seniors by thousands every year. Is that the rhetoric that the Democratic Party is going to start pushing in order to get them over the top in key battleground states such as an Arizona, a Florida, a Texas?
With theme and variations, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that the right approach, Al?
Politically, yes. Is it responsible? I think the country is in such difficult shape in this area that we need some people who will fall on their swords, and I don't see anybody in either party getting ready to fall
Nobody's
on their swords.
Particularly interested.
It's not what politicians do, but it's what needs to be done. So I think by the time we get through with this election, we may all be pretty disgusted with both parties.
But Carl Tubin, being a former Democratic chair in Maryland, was Chairman Smith's statement out of Florida, was that over the top?
He is playing to his base, and his base in Florida, much
which
of
is your South
seniors,
Florida seniors.
Seniors, and he's playing to his base. I'm going to be the optimist, as I usually am, and I'm hoping that when this is over and all the dust settles and we know who's going to be in the majority in the House and the Senate, we know who's president, that somehow or other everyone's going to see where we are and come together and do the right things. Now, that might be too optimistic a thing, but I don't think anybody in either party wants to see this country go down the drain.
Congressman Al.
If these guys are smart, and sometimes it takes a long while and casting many votes before you finally figure it out. The public's memory is what you need to worry about, because they don't retain things too long. All of the votes that I ever laid awake night worrying about, oh, I'm going to vote this way, and it's just going to be, never, ever came up in a campaign. And I mentioned earlier voting for the Ronald Reagan budget. And I voted against everything else leading up to it. And I knew, I just knew, because you could cut support for Reagan out of the air, you know, and build a building with it. I just knew that I was a one-term congressman. And I just proceeded to act. Never came up. If they were to move in there early and cut their deals and make their compromises and pass this damn thing, by the time they were all up for re-election, the public would be thinking about something else.
Yep. But the other big question is, Romney has not garnered the big support of the true conservative, if you want to put a real label on the Tea Party type conservatives. Is Ryan's selection going to energize a true conservative base, Alan Moore?
It does energize them. That was something we've talked about. That it stokes them up, and they've been, you know, trying to get excited about Romney, haven't been able to get excited. At least now they have some reason to be more excited than they were. They're more likely to work. And some of the wealthy conservatives who've been standing on the side are likely to open up their checkbooks to the ticket now that it exists. And that's not nothing. That will mean millions of dollars to
this call. Does it mean votes?
Well,
will this be enough to energize to get out the vote?
I think it does some of both. On the other hand, the question is, what does it do to the moderate side, so-called, of the party? What's it do to independents? So, you know, there's trade-offs in every case.
Carl Toobin.
This has got good points and bad points. You know, the Tea Party has really pulled this House of Representatives way to the right. They've opposed everything. Ryan has been a part of it. You know, and the agriculture bill, they had a whole lot of problems on the agriculture bill. They finally passed this emergency bill. It was $300 and some million, which is about enough to maybe handle the drought in one state. But it was, and Ryan was a part of all that. So this has got pluses and minuses. And the Tea Party, you know, I think the Tea Party might be the object of a lot of people in this campaign.
Well, interesting thought process on this. We're coming up on the top of the hour. It's happy hour here at Shelley's Back Room, where we order our, in the case of Congressman Al, our martinis, our red wines, our beers, our Jack Daniels, and we cut up a new cigar and start lighting those up. But when we come back, we're gonna finish up talking about, now that the sides are picked, where is this going to go? Is this going to get nastier before it gets better? And is this going to be the campaign of all negative? This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us. You know, you hear us talk about Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. It's being the place to be. America's premier cigar tavern, place to make new friends or visit old friends, or even have a lively political discussion like we do here on Backroom Politics. But what you may not know, Shelley's is the place for private parties.
Shelley's Back Room is available to host events for groups of 10 to 250. From cocktail receptions to sit-down dinners, Shelley's can provide custom menu options to suit your needs and budget. Although Shelley's is a smoke-friendly environment, Shelley's can make accommodations for non-smokers based on the size of your party, but heck, why would you want to? With a cigar menu like they have here, why would you even consider going smoke-free? Event pricing varies based on the time of the day of the week chosen for your event. For more information on private parties at Shelley's Back Room, go to www.shelleysbackroom.com/private-party. Shelley's Back Room, the place to be, as Bob likes to say it. It's also a place for private parties. Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street, in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where we're going to finish out our second hour of Backroom Politics Live on Blog Talk Radio. Bob and I were just talking during the break. Now that the tickets are set, now we get to see the head-to-head true coverage of hopefully what will be the issues, but what we're seeing is an increasingly more negative-type campaign. But when we look at Romney, Ryan, Bob, you and I were talking during the break that you think Ryan was a mistake to be the VP choice.
Well, I don't think he was the best choice that could have been made. It is clear to me that...
You stand by Rob Portman.
I do. It's clear that what Ryan will give is almost a requirement that we have a very serious debate on economic issues, and that's a very good thing, because even if the Republicans didn't win the election, if the debate could go well, so the public understood what the ramifications are of where we are economically and what we're going to have to do, because we obviously need revenues, we obviously have to remake our entitlement programs, and one party is 100% for one thing and 100% against the other, and just reverse. So we have to find a solution, and I'm concerned that we're not going to be able to do that. I just have a feeling that we're going to have a terribly negative campaign that is just going to, scare people if they can.
Well, I want to go back to your comment though about Paul Ryan being the wrong choice. I mean, a lot of the our famous helper here at Chili's Back Room, Nasha, did you have to take our drink orders, or are they already in?
I got them in.
Oh, we got Congress and all. Oh, okay. Very good. Very good. But going back to my point is, when we talk about Paul Ryan, I mean, the big box that when you talk about Rob Portman, for example, Rob Portman is, he was the connectivity of the Hill. I think that Paul Ryan checks that box because of the fact that instead of the Senate side where Portman had his influence.
Yes, I'm going to get a glass of Chardonnay.
Bob's got to order his drink. Where we had Rob Portman having the connectivity to the Hill on the Senate side, I think Paul Ryan brings the connectivity to the House side, which is where a lot of the conflict between the White House and the Hill has happened.
That's very true, but he also brings with him that flag he carries with respect to the budget. And I think that will be more of a problem that we'll have to
Congressman
fight than it would be if Mr. Portman, who has a broader response, who has a broader record in the House and Senate, I think would not be as hot.
Congressman Al.
I think I agree with Bob, and you mentioned earlier we wanted to talk a little bit about whether there's going to be a positive campaign overall or a negative campaign. By selecting Ryan, they certainly have done what we have all agreed they've done. They're going to make this campaign more about these economic issues, and that may well be a good thing. But he has a plan. He's not just somebody in search of a plan. It's not somebody who can be part of forging a compromise and a solution. He's got to defend what the Democrats are clearly going to attack. And so I think that's he's a mixed bag. He's going to get the focus on it, but the focus will be on his plan rather than on solving the problem.
Alan Moore, was it a mistake?
I'll tell you when I will have that answer. It'll be the day after the election. Then I will know whether it was a mistake or not. And maybe even a week before.
Part of what we do here is we also talk about a lot of experience. I mean, we have a very lovely visitor. The lovely Mrs. Alan Moore. The lovely right Reverend Alan. This is Alan Moore. Hello. How are you? I'm about to go head to head with your husband.
You're
stay tuned for the fireworks.
You're not live.
Yeah, we are actually. Yeah, yeah. No, you're on the air. I wanted you to announce it to our thousands of people.
Alan was just about to make a statement.
He just asked me specifically whether it was a mistake to pick Ryan. And I said, I will give you my firm and final answer the day after the election.
Now, I'm trying to pull you off the fence post here. What's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me that it's not a mistake.
Why?
For all the things I've talked about. Because it moves the narrative away from Romney's taxes to some substance. And that it gives some definition that we have not had about Romney. Now, is it risky? You bet it's risky. That's why I don't know whether it's a mistake or not. But I was glad to see what I consider to be a level of courage and boldness, not way crazy Hail Mary pass that we saw the last time that just completely fell incomplete and game over early when John McCain picked Sarah Palin. But this one I have some hope for. And so I don't see it as a mistake. Was he my first choice? No. And was there anybody I thought was really fabulous? Yes. And that was Mitch Daniels, and he was out of it months ago.
Right.
So, you know, in terms of...
He got a real paying job.
Of Ryan versus Portman versus Poletti versus Christie versus Jindal. You know, they all had pluses and minuses, as does Ryan. So is it a home run? No. I'm hoping for at least a single.
we need at least a double.
True, very true.
We could use a double.
Very true. But Carl Tubman, give me one last.
I think it's a mistake for the Republicans, and it is a good thing for the Democrats. And I'll just point out one thing that the day after, when they separated and started campaigning alone, Romney was asked to question point blank from a reporter about, do you support the Ryan budget plan? And he ignored the question altogether and went off on another tangent. And I'm not sure whether they haven't coordinated yet, which could be they haven't figured out an answer to that question. But, you know, I thought...
Well, he's not used to answering questions.
Right.
Well,
right.
Wow.
That's true, too. But
he gave
a three-minute answer to a question that wasn't asked to him.
Hold on. Bob Hines.
He shouldn't be answering questions like that. He is the presidential nominee.
He's the top of the ticket.
He's the top of the ticket. He obviously knows what's in the budget that Mr. Ryan has proposed. I'm sure he has some differences. I'm sure he has some agreements, but it's his decision. I think it's clear that we're more likely to have a serious debate than we would have had some other person been nominated for spoken for vice president. But the fact of the matter is, the one good thing we can expect, I believe, from the Ryan decision, is that we will have a chance for a serious debate. I hope it won't end up with just a bunch of negative yelling at each other, but at least we got a shot at it.
Congressman Al.
I just want to make a note here from what Bob said. Let's see. The presidential candidate does not need to have answers to issues, questions, because that's what you said.
Because why?
He doesn't have to.
Because he doesn't.
He doesn't have to have all the answers right now, putting them all down on paper. He doesn't have to.
Modified it a little bit.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to do it at this stage. He's going to be having to do it as he goes forward.
Alan Moore.
His answer to that particular question is going to be, I'm for the Romney budget plan. I love my candidate. He has had done a lot of thinking here, and his budget proposal has much to be commended, and it has influenced my thinking, and I'm glad he's by my side. He does not need to dig into the details. One question, one time, does not
campaign be the Republican candidate.
He's
for president.
Well, wait. For the record, can we put
Wayne campaign view on that?
Probably not.
Veto.
Veto.
No, actually, I think he would be a fabulous Republican candidate.
Well, we'll talk about that on a future show. I want to go back to this. I want to go back to this because here's the thing: is to expect. Literally, he was asked that question literally 36 hours after he had announced Paul Ryan. And to go out and say, okay, yeah, what we've done is we've done a head-to-head between my budget plan and Ryan's GOP House budget plan, and here's where we differ. I'm not going to say that. And Paul Ryan's going to be the first one to sit there and go, look, I am the vice presidential candidate for the GOP ticket, and I support what my presidential candidate says.
Yep.
I think,
I love the fact that I get to sit and help him. And he gets my input and making decisions. We're going to be a team. He can also say, hey, this was a budget proposal put forward that had input from a lot of people. This wasn't just Paul Ryan who said, I'm coming down with tablets from the mountainside, and this is the budget. For now and evermore. He has already changed his position on the Medicare voucher scheme, and he moved in the direction of a compromise with Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, where they said, we believe that everybody should have a choice between traditional Medicare or this voucher scheme. That's a departure from where he started, and that's a departure from the position on which he will be demonized.
Correct.
By the Democrats. People evolve. People evolve, including Paul Ryan,
Mitt Romney, George, his father, but okay.
Mitt Romney.
But all in all, does it seem now that the tickets are set, that this election campaign, particularly in this presidential cycle, has nowhere to go but up? I mean, have we hit rock bottom,
or are we going to
see a continued downturn in the negativity? Bob Hines.
You're going to see a lot of negative ads because that's what campaigns do. I'm sure you'll see some positive ads
Not
as well.
Not always. I mean, I remember, I remember that, the great Ronald Reagan commercial with the bear. It wasn't negative against any particular candidate. It was just a well done policy based political ad.
Splitting hairs.
Congressman Al, is it really splitting hairs?
Yeah, it was.
Why?
It was a negative ad in the sense that it was trying to send a message to the public that said things aren't very good. There's a bear in the woods, and the implication was. You better stick with the guy that knows how to handle it. So, I don't think it was a bad commercial, a nasty commercial, a mean commercial, but it was negative.
Yeah, you don't have to make the ads nasty to make them negative.
Right.
But it seems that we're now in a presidential election cycle that a lot of the ads that are out there are in fact based nasty. Would you agree with that, Bob?
No, I'm sure I've seen some nasty ads, but they're also substantive. They're saying, you know, this is what the other guy is going to do, and isn't that a bad idea?
But it depends. Alan Moore, we've seen fact checks on both sides come up and saying these are blatant lies.
Well, and what we're going to see now is new negatives that will lead to new blatant lies. But I'll, you know, and I'm reminded that a week ago, I spent way too much time, as I often do, talking about Harry Reid's accusation that that he had heard from somebody who knew, without identifying who, that Romney had not paid taxes for 10 years. And it was an outrageous Joe McCarthy-like comment, trashed by virtually everyone. Harry Reid is so glad that there's now Paul Ryan on the ticket, and we're no longer trashing him. The other guy who's happy is a guy named Bill Burton, who runs this PAC that supports Obama, that put out this other outrageous ad with a former employee of a steel company that Bain Capital once bought and then had to close because they couldn't compete against the Chinese, and said, My wife
died because of
died
Romney.
Of cancer. Basically, it was Romney's actions led directly to the death of my wife. That has been thoroughly and completely discredited, although the head of that PAC said, no, all the facts are right. Ugly, wrong, disgusting, and a clear lack of any guts by the Obama people to say, we deplore that ad.
It also came out that particular individual that was in that ad was in a previous early Obama anti-Bain Capital ad and was apparently part of a working organization of we're anti-Bain, this is the mouthpiece.
This was a serious embarrassment to the world of Obama, and they missed the boat on it. But that's what campaigns do. They don't like to deplore ads of allies of theirs. It's the rare politician of the same party who does, although most people were very quiet on
McCain
it.
McCain's done it
a number of times, absolutely.
Yeah. Carl Toobin.
We have things going on both sides. You've got the Republicans with the fact that the president had taken away work for welfare.
Stupid ad.
Which wasn't true.
Stupid ad.
Right.
Wrong ad. Absolutely.
Exactly.
I agree completely. Dumb ad. I don't know what they were thinking.
Congressman Al.
Going back to your original question, was this going to be a more or less negative campaign? And obviously, there's going to be a lot of negativity to it. But it seems to me that the Republicans have put themselves in a position to run a positive campaign. Whether they can or not is going to depend entirely upon the Democrats. And the Democrats have, I think, are in a position to run a very positive campaign, too, except that they could run it on issues in which the president has not made positive presentations already. I mean, he can argue that he saved the world's economy. He can argue that he really prevented this country from going off the edge. He hasn't in either instance. There are other positive things that he could talk about. If he was willing to talk about his positives and let the Republicans talk about their positives, and then they would be, then they'd be criticized around the edges, each person's position, certainly on the economy, you could have a reasonably positive campaign. But I don't see how the president is going to suddenly find how to present positively his positive accomplishments. Thus, they will have to go negative. Thus, the Republicans will have to.
But this is. I mean, but let's also be clear: the Obama campaign is being run by old school Chicago political machine operatives. You're talking about it's easier to go negative and go negative hard than it is for us to talk about arguably what possible positive outcomes, whether it's in the economy, whether it's stimulus, whether it's whatever, you know, we haven't seen that coming out of, we didn't see it in the 2000 a campaign.
And I thought that was what I just said.
I think you
just reinforce it. Just reinforce it.
All right, well, thank you. I need a lot of help from the Republicans to reinforce me when I criticize the Democrats.
Of course. It's one of the few times we can do this,
as
Al.
As a matter of fact, I'll vote for you.
But anyway, we're going to take a break. We're coming up on a break right now. When we come back, there's actually primaries going on in several states, including some key ones in Connecticut, Florida, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. When we come back, we're going to talk about that because that's going to have several ramifications, particularly out of Florida and Connecticut, that could change the dynamic of Capitol Hill. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room in Washington, D.C., live on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes. You know, for those who listen to Backroom Politics and know about Shelley's Back Room, they think of it as some sort of cigar bar where politicians go to smoke their cigars and drink their martinis. Actually, what you don't know about Shelley's Back Room, Shelley's Back Room has one of the greatest menus in the city. I kid you not. You've got the campfire wings, famous campfire wings. 1 pound of roasted, not fried, seasoned marinated jumbo chicken rings served with their own special honey mustard sauce. Folks, if you like chicken wings, you've never had the campfire wings. Best wings in the city, bar none, I guarantee. If you don't like it, Al, you can call us up and tell us that you don't like it. You have daily specials. Come down on a day when they have the Justin Chicken Sandwich. The sandwich named after me. Breaded chicken breast, provolone cheese, thick cut bacon on a Kaiser roll served with a honey mustard sauce. Folks, it doesn't get more artery clogging than that, but it is worth it. Come down to Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street, in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the premier sponsor of Backroom Politics. In the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. This is Blog Talk Radio's Backroom Politics. We're going to change gears right now and talk about some key primaries that are going on in Connecticut, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. A couple of big names on the block, and as a result of redistricting, the big one right now that everybody, well, one of the big ones that everybody's looking at is the race which pits longtime transportation longtime Transportation Committee member and now chairman of the Transportation Committee, John Mica, against freshman Republican, former state legislator Sandy Adams. It's a dogfight in that one, Bob, but and it looks like for the first time, Chairman Mike has got himself, he's running nervous right
Sandy,
now.
Sandy, who is Sandy? Sandy who?
Sandy Adams. Yeah. Is a freshman.
Is he, she, what is it? What is
she.
It?
She.
Is she nice?
She is very nice.
She wins.
Look.
There's a policy issue.
And
for nice.
Yeah.
And
Micah is one of the least likable members of Congress.
Yes, he is.
He's just a bit of
the Republican.
But Al, just think if that had been the measure when you were serving.
Oh, everybody loves Congressman Al. Are you kidding, Alan? Please.
Not according to all those people who voted against me.
But for a long time, John Micah has been the transportation voice of the Republican Party on the Hill. You know, anything from high-speed rail to issues regarding TSA, FAA, airline, you know, air transportation, even surface transportation, he has been the Republicans' go-to. If he
basically replaced Norm Mineta in that role.
Yes, very much so. But
those issues are not going to be the issues that anybody votes on this year. It's going to be different. It's going to be the entitlements and taxes.
But if John Micah were to lose the primary today, are we going to see a different dynamic from a key committee like the Transportation Committee?
Oh, I don't think one member, even a senior member, fundamentally.
Even a senior member who's been chairman twice?
That committee deals with highways, roads. It's a transportation operation. It's a pretty structured, the issues are clear. The players are the same. I don't think it changes much at all.
There were changes on the Commerce Committee when the Republicans took over and longtime chairman John Dingell ceased to be the chairman. But they weren't that dramatic.
No. The issues are the same.
The issues that committee deals with are the same. The
Except
parties
it carved up the committee.
It did. It did.
Yes.
Which
Dingell wouldn't have allowed.
Right.
Yeah.
But are we starting to see, I mean, there's other news coming out of Capitol Hill this afternoon, is a longtime Blue Dog Democrat, I mean, and a very powerful barking Blue Dog Democrat, Dennis Cardoza, announced his immediate resignation effective tomorrow at midnight. That, again, we're seeing some dynamic change. That just hit. That's breaking news, actually, off the Hill.
But remember, he had announced he wasn't going to run.
He announced, but his leaving.
And he talked about the challenges of parenthood.
Correct.
He's got a couple of adopted kids that he adopted 12 years ago. Obviously, there's something going on in the household that caused that.
We'll
probably know in coming days.
Right.
It's very hard for a retiring sitting congressman to look for work under current ethics rules.
Yeah,
and he may want to be free to be able to talk with some folks.
But does it look like that we've seen the last of John Micah, do you think, Bob?
I don't know enough about, you know, his district, but he's on the border of South Florida, isn't he?
It's actually North and Central Florida where he's going. But you're talking about Sandy Adams, who's gotten the endorsement of Sarah Palin, Condoleezza Rice. Those are some big names in the new and improved GOP 2.0.
That is an unusual combination.
It's a very unusual combination. Very unusual combination.
One of them doesn't know what the other one is thinking. I'm not sure.
Well, that...
There's one of them that doesn't know what she's thinking.
Wow. Okay. Wait, are we... So much for stability. So much for stability.
I thought that was very civil. If you think so.
The other big race that everybody's looking at right now is Chris Shays' race up in Connecticut. Chris Shays, who, if you had talked 2 years ago, a lot of people thought he was unbeatable. Looks like he's now in a race for his political life right now. Alan Moore, is this a surprise?
This year, nothing surprises me.
Congressman Al.
I hope not. Chris Shays is one of the moderate Republicans, of which there are fewer and fewer, who I think has made a major contribution to compromises that have been made between Democrats and Republicans on a host of issues.
And the Congress needs guys like Chris Shays.
Yes, they do.
Does the loss of Chris Shays to somebody who could be considered a Tea Party type Republican, although a Northeast Republican, does the loss of Chris Shays create a possibility of more logjamming than we would have seen with somebody who's not afraid to cross the aisle in somebody like Shays?
Of course.
Yeah, but any Republican who wins an election in Connecticut is not a Tea Party person.
Really?
Fundamentally, doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It puts the seat in jeopardy for the Republican.
That's right. If someone who is a Tea Party person were to win that seat, if not the next election, certainly the next one after that would be gone, because Connecticut is not a comfortable place for Tea Party people.
No. I mean, that's you start getting into your make-believe New England-type Republicans.
Exactly. It's the kind we could use some more of.
But
we don't have enough of. I mean, Republicans almost don't have any elected officials from New England.
Another big one that we're looking at right now is the fight in Connecticut's 5th District, where former State House Speaker Chris Donovan, who's a front runner, is going up against State Representative Elizabeth Esty. We've also got Dan Roberti, who's involved in this. Roberti is backed by Bill Clinton and James Carville. Are we surprised that Bill Clinton is getting involved in a district race?
You know, there are weird situations sometimes where, for one reason or another, some loyalty that goes back for years was developed, and people say, they did something for me, I'm always there to do something for them, and occasionally it creates for some strange opponents. This is one of those cases.
Carl Thuban.
Bill Clinton, President Clinton's endorsements are to people who have helped Hillary Clinton, as you said, have helped Hillary Clinton in the past and who have helped him in the past. And that's what this is. And, you know, Carville is the same thing. You know, these were people who were helpful to Hillary and to Bill, and that's it.
But when you look at, for example, Bill Clinton, it's been very unusual to see, particularly formal presidential candidates, of going in and getting involved in some arguably smaller congressional district races, particularly in a primary.
I can't tell you names, but he's done this before in this election.
Congressman Al.
And he is the youngest former president we've had around in a long, long time. And the idea of retiring to the farm, as Dwight Eisenhower did, and Harry Truman did, and so many—it's just not—it's not his time in life to do that. So he's going to stay active.
And he's very popular, very, very popular. I mean, that's why he's going to be at the convention. He's going to give a major speech at the convention.
That's what permits him to do it. That's why he's being asked.
Exactly.
But we're seeing some dynamic changes, particularly as a result of redistricting. Does the advantage, Alan Moore, possibly in redistricting, particularly with the GOP, but even on some of the Democrats? We've got a lot of more fringe involvement in some of these Democratic primaries. Are we seeing a change where there's going to be Congress 2.0 as a result of the 2012 election?
Well, we're looking now at some very narrow, specific single races. We've still got a couple of big ones out in California that we're looking forward to, where it's Democrat versus Democrat. But that's not going to determine any trends. It creates some fascinating moments, especially in those particular states, where you pit congressman against congressman, or you change somebody's district enough that somebody who's been safe for a long time is suddenly vulnerable. But I don't see any major trend that suggests.
This is an unusual year because we are this first election really after the last census, and we've got a number of races where you had two Congress people of the same party running against each other in the primaries, it's unusual. We only happens once every 10 years, but this is a particularly unusual year and a kind of a crazy year in that sense, because you know there are states that lose a member or two, states that gain a member or two. It's a lot of fun if you're going to gain a seat, but it's really tough when they redistrict, as California has, and they've had two or three primary elections where in effect members of both of the same party are running against each other.
Carl Toobin.
You also have commissions in different states that have been created to draw the lines.
And we have more and more that's happening,
right,
and that's
exactly.
All to the good.
And that's why you're having all these members running against
each other. Right. Because the state legislature is no longer fixing the deal.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly.
Right. On the same point, though, when we talk about the redistricting and all the changes that are coming up, one of the other debates that's been happening here in Washington is the debate over who's moderating the presidential debate. In only a town that only believes that itself is important and the rest of the world doesn't exist, this would be news. Well, apparently it sparked national debate now. For those of you who are keeping score at home, the Commission on Presidential Debate announced the first debate will happen, will be moderated by PBS's Jim Lehrer, who has done several presidential debates before.
Yep. He's done more than anybody else.
Yeah. Correct.
He's done 12.
Yeah. He's done, correct. But it seems to me that apparently there are people that believe he's too left-wing to be moderating, even though he's been very mainstream, middle of the road. For the first time in over 20 years, we have CNN's Candy Crowley also moderating the second presidential debate. And apparently, because she's with CNN, that too has spurned some. Why is this important to the political mainstream here in D.C., Congressman Al?
Because the partisans, and I suggest this for both parties, the partisans tend to believe that reporters are totally biased. And I think that's untrue. If they report anything you don't like, you say, they're biased. The only reason they said that was because they're da-da-da-da-da. Jim Lehrer probably is the person that would win accolades from all of his colleagues as being right down the middle. But he works for PBS, and conservatives don't like PBS philosophically. They don't like government-funded programming, and they think PBS is to the left. So they don't like him. Based upon his record, not PBS's, his record, that's nonsense.
Yeah. Go ahead, Alan Moore.
The way these decisions are made on who's going to moderate are quite interesting. You've got a commission on presidential debates that's been around since the 1980s. It's equally divided between Republican and Democrat, former office holders, former senior officials. They have to agree on who's going to moderate this debate. And in addition to them agreeing, both presidential campaigns have to agree. You are looking for a common denominator here, and you're also looking for a set of skills, particularly in the case of Jim Lehrer and Bob Schieffer, who will be doing the presidential debates where they engage both candidates one-on-one and move through a 90-minute period. Candy Crowley has got the town hall meeting where she has to work a crowd, and that's a different kind of challenge.
Yeah. Right.
You've got somebody talking into your ear all the time. You're trying to keep it on point. You're trying to stay smooth. Sometimes you have to cut people off. Everybody's most comfortable with seasoned veterans of this business who are not perceived as in the political tank for one side or the other. The person who's doing the vice presidential debate is Martha Raddatz,
right,
who covers foreign policy and used to cover defense at ABC. So they're all seasoned folks. The criticism, it was news because it's the first time that you've had a woman who will be the sole panelist.
Judy Woodruff.
For one of the presidential debates. Well, in the past, they've sometimes done a panel, and they've decided that doesn't work very well. That it
right.
works much better if you don't have journalists competing, but you just have one.
Congressman
Al.
And
there's also a question about the age of them, because
correct.
It's an old cohort.
Congressman Al.
The presidential panel is headed by one notably partisan Republican and a noticeably partisan Democrat. And I happened to, years ago, I can't even remember how, I got to know for a short time Frank Perrenkoff, who is the Republican on this. And he was a very partisan chairman of the Republican National Committee. I found in working with him on something entirely different, he was a totally fair, intelligent, capable guy. I have never seen anything that he has done since he has been one of the co-chairs for years now.
And who is the Democratic co-chair now?
Mike McCurry.
For a long time, it was Paul Kirk.
It was right.
a former
yes.
Democratic
National
Committee.
Exactly.
Until he went to right. Mike, but now it's currently Mike McCurry. Who's got some stature and some credibility in this town, no question.
Sure. Let me just finish with Perrenkoff. He is a professional, and he knows when to be partisan and when not to and how not to. And if he supports these people, I would, on his word alone, accept them.
But you also look at a lot of people that have come out once the announcement came out and saying that the slate of moderators, even in the vice presidential debate, lacks of a true vision, a true view of the demographics of today's American voters. Some of the names that they put up, Chuck Todd was a name that they put up. He was apparently in consideration. Younger guy, very proficient in dealing with new media. You've got Jose Diaz-Balart, a Hispanic who is a former office holder, former elected official, represents a Hispanic demographic. They were also talking about Lester Holt, who would obviously a very established journalist and a known figure here in Washington, D.C. media, an African-American who's got a lot of credibility in the politics. Are the demographics that much of an issue, or is this just we need the proven experience to truly get the mission done? Carl Tubin first.
I think this is just a sign of the times that we're living in, that, you know, you got to tear someone down, you got to make an uproar, and that's what this is. I think all of them are qualified and good. Candy Crowley is, you know, as you said, has a little different vein in the news and how she reports it, but they're all good people. Schieffer has been doing this for years. And
as is Jim Lehrer.
Right.
Bob Hines, you had a comment.
You know, the commission moves slowly as it, you know, chooses who these folks are. I've known Frank Perrenkoff for 30 years. As Al said, he is as fair and as straight as you can possibly be. But it is also true that both he and I know that his colleagues, his former colleague, now deceased, who was his co-chairman on the Democratic side, always were very, very reluctant to try to, you know, to move too fast in finding people. They wanted to make sure they had people who were, number one, very well recognized by the public as fair and straight, and that was the most important thing they wanted. And I'm sure it's still the same way.
Alan Moore.
Tomorrow this issue will be dead and gone. It's only being talked about today because the announcement came yesterday. Remember, these two senior Republicans and their entire commission, which is evenly divided Republicans and Democrats, have to agree and so do the Romney campaign and the Obama campaign. This is not a time to be aggressive and bold and risky and sexy and so on. It's safety, 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 experience, experience, experience. That's what we've got. It's a non-issue. Tomorrow it'll be dead.
Congressman Al.
One of the things that I dislike that comes from the left, and I, there's no way I've been able to figure out how to blame the right on this, and that is political correctness. And this is all political
correctness. This screams of political correctness in your view.
You know, that's ageism. They should be against that if they're politically correct.
And since it's balanced sex, they won't charge sexism, but now it's something else.
Yeah, it's now a lack of vision in demographics.
And it's political correctness gone crazy, and to hell with it.
Absolutely. We're now 9 minutes from the end of the show. It's now time for my favorite part of the show, where we talk about the latest rumor, the latest innuendo, the latest gossip happening around the Beltway. It's Tell Me a Story. Al, you said that you had a story. Al, tell me a story.
I actually do. This one, however, comes out of my head. But I did read an article this week, and it pointed out several things. It pointed out something that Romney is holding the percentages kind of like 47%, 48% popularity, and Obama has got 49-50% popularity, and that Obama's the support of his positions is much lower than that, way down there, but the positions of Romney are lower than that. That the amount of percentage of support he has is essentially the rock bottom level of what any Republican gets in these kind of polls. So the fact that Obama is better liked, even though his positions are not liked, and that Romney is stuck at what he would get if he were dead, lead me to predict, first one, Obama will win the election.
Wow. All right. There we go. First one coming out of the box. And because our record of picking this has been stellar. Alan Moore, tell me a story.
All right, this is a little guessing game. So I'm going to read a quote.
Okay.
Yes,
Ralph. And we'll see if anybody can guess who the person is, because I think the person who said this, and it's a quote about Paul Ryan, is got a decent shot to be the next Secretary of Treasury, regardless of who wins the election.
What's
okay?
The quote?
Here's the quote. This guy is amazing. He is honest. He is straightforward. He is sincere. The budget he presented is sensible, a sensible, straightforward, honest, serious budget, and it cuts the deficit just like we did by $4 trillion. The president, as you remember, came out with a budget, and I don't think anybody took that budget very seriously. The Senate voted against it 97-0.
I have a guess.
So the question is, who said it?
I have a guess.
Okay.
Investment banker boss Jamie Dimon.
No. No.
I don't know.
Okay.
Anybody?
I don't know. Who is it?
It was Erskine Bowles.
Wow.
The Simpson Bowles Commission, who way before Ryan was nominated, said, this guy, who, even though he didn't vote for the report, he's my favorite Republican. And Ryan said of Bowles, this guy's my favorite Democrat. They have enormous respect. I think you're going to see that quote, which there's a video of, as a campaign ad before too terribly long, once they try to nullify him. But Bowles is kind of a credible candidate to be Treasury Secretary when Geithner leaves. but he's also a potential crossover guy. Should Romney win, they will need a credible, thoughtful person, and he has investment bank experience, and he was chief of staff to Clinton, because we do need somebody to put the big deal together, and Bowles strikes me as a really interesting candidate for either president. Yes.
Wow. I tell you what, that's great.
Alan, I will never say this again. That's brilliant.
That is brilliant. That is brilliant. I got to tell you, I'm just waiting for when Alan Simpson comes out and endorses Obama.
I think that's a lost cause.
Lost cause, I agree. That is a great story. Bob Hines, tell me a story.
Like Al, I think that... I am beginning to believe that it's going to be very difficult for Mr. Romney and his partner to win the election. I say that not because my candidate for vice president did not get nominated.
You're just bitter.
Sourbridge.
Yeah, you're just bitter.
No, it's just that I fundamentally believe that there are at least four or five states, Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, Florida, where... The ability of the Democrats to put negative ads out on Mr. Ryan and what he proposes and will be so strong that the senior citizens will almost on a two to one basis at least vote against the Republican ticket.
It's just got a lot. I got to tell you though,
but I believe
mean,
that
looking at. If you were to look historically, there's a lot of similarity between Obama 2012 and Jimmy Carter 1980. Tough economic times, stalled recovery, out of control spending. There's a lot of things that are similar to this, and you still think that with 8.3,
there's one major difference.
Yeah. What's that?
He's not Jimmy Carter.
That's right.
Good point. Very good point.
That's right.
Mondale was a very poor candidate. And he never went over on TV and admitted after the election that I never did good TV, period.
But
much to my chagrin, that is what
that's your
I believe will happen.
Wow. Carl Toobin, tell me a story.
Yes. There must be something about picking a vice president that really shakes up the presidential nominee. If you recall, 4 years ago, when President Obama named Mr. Biden, he said, "And let me introduce to you the next president. I mean, Vice President, Joe Biden."
Okay, my story this week is 2 weeks ago. I reported on the show during Tell Me a Story that the decision for the VP had been made. Several news stories have come out that have reaffirmed that fact. However, because the final meeting happened on August 5th, right around the time that Romney had left for Europe, but the final deal was struck with Ryan, who had been a front runner apparently all along, but that deal was done. The reality is that the final decision happened after Romney left for Europe. Even though they said the decision made, Ryan had not accepted. It was only after a meeting at a senior Romney camp official's house up in Massachusetts was that, and they did a good job of flying him into everywhere but Boston or everywhere but where Mitt Romney was. One of the better political secrets being kept. Got to give the Romney coach credit, but we were active. The decision had been made. So, that being said, this has been Blog Talk Radio's Backroom Politics, on behalf of Congressman Al Swift, the Honorable Ellen Moore, Honorable Bob Hines, and Carl Toobin. I'm the moderator, Radio Justin Russell, and we will be back here next week for another edition of Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Backroom, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Bob?
More and more, it's the place to be.
Especially more and more. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Have a great week.